You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist. Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 64, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I can see Solak frantically going for a number that's 64 on his laptop right now. I'm your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. As always, joined by the on-time co-host, the best doggone co-host in the game.
Don't patronize me. Don't patronize me right now.
Mr. 8-year streak without a bad day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
Mike, every day is a good day to be alive. Especially on days where, like, every day, I was punctual as heck, as I always have been, and I forever always will be. Yeah, I can't find a 64. I don't know anything about that. But somebody yelled at me yesterday because I forgot a very famous 63.
Hank Fraley.
No, I know it was Hank Fraley. I wanna find who it was who yelled at me. Whoever it was who yelled at me, you're a regular listener to the show, and I can't remember your name. It's like 50 Shades of Rage or something like that on Twitter, which is a little aggressive. But I forgot about Hank Fraley in my haste, and for that I apologize. Hank was the man. But yeah, every day is a good day to be alive. I'm excited for this game. It's going to be a good time.
And it's a good day to be alive for me as well. Ben, I just got done recording with Cody Alexander from MatchQuarters.com. I've written a couple books on defending the modern offense with the modern defense, and we talked about a lot of things that are pertinent to what the Bears are going to try to do to us. So figuring out how to defend trips, how to defend RPOs, how to defend jet motion, things of those nature. So that is going to be up on the feed after this show, probably either later tonight or early on Saturday. It's a really good chat. Sweet. If you love the X and O chat that me and Ben have here on this show, Cody Alexander has done it. He is next level awesome. You're going to really enjoy that. And it's funny because, Ben, I reached out to you the other day and I was saying early on in the week, you were giving me crap because I was doing an early deep dive on the Bears. And I was like, hey, man, I'm learning how to defend RPOs. And he's like, oh, cool. How are you doing that? I'm like, oh, I'm reading up on Cody Alexander stuff. He's like, oh, really? And sends me a picture of the book that it was the only book that you took on your trip, right?
Yeah, no, literally I knew I was not going to be in Chicago for the week leading up to this game. And so on my flights and on my travels and whatever, you know, I was up with the family and stuff, I brought with me Match Quarters, The Art of X, which is the first book for Cody Alexander, because I knew that book was heavily predicated on the idea of the match quarter system, which is very the Chicago Bears base defense is a quarters defense. And when they run match, they run it out of a split field defense. They don't like to be single high. They like to be middle of the field open. So a lot of the basic tenets between Alexander's presentation of match quarters and what Vic Fangio runs are analogous, to the point where it's a good primer to read when you look at the Chicago Bears defense. And we mentioned this, I think, on previous shows, Nick Foles' note that the most difficult aspect of this Bears defense is the way that they're able to match coverage in the defensive backfield, and it's true. This is a very, I don't think I've seen such a well-gelled secondary in quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, typically, I think when you see really good secondaries in the NFL, you know, when you're talking about Seattle and the Legion of Boom a few years ago, you're talking about Baltimore Ravens for the past couple of years. A lot of it is because they just have lockdown man coverage corners who can just erase areas of the field. And I don't want to take away from Prince and Mukamura and Kyle Fuller, who play great football, but they're not that mold. It really is because of what they're able to do on the chalkboard and the fluidity with which they can check their coverages and then pass off route concepts along with the linebackers and the safeties is really, really impressive high-level stuff that typically, even at the NFL level, that level of complexity to pull off against NFL offenses is tremendous. And so it's a stellar pass defense in that regard from an X and O perspective. There are weaknesses. We're going to talk about the weaknesses, how I anticipate the Eagles will attack those weaknesses. But generally speaking, yeah, you look at this defense's ability to play with two high safeties, which gives them a lot of freedom to fill against the run very aggressively for their linebackers, gives them a lot of strength against second-level RPOs because their safeties are filling downhill against those quick little slants and those slot hitches and whatever. So the ability to stay too high and then be successful passing off half-field route concepts is unmatched in the league, and it's the reason the defense has been so good.
I agree. The complexity of that defense is really fun to watch, and that's going to be the main topic of the show today. It's going to be the Philadelphia Eagles offense against the Chicago Bears defense. I really did nail that on the first take this time. I'm proud of myself. I had to say it a few times before the show, but we got it done. So, but before we get into that, we have to go over the injury report. A lot of this was covered on BGN Radio number 30 with John Stolness and Brandon Lee Gowton, May He Forever Reign. We are going to talk about some specific things. There's a new addition to the injury report for the Eagles, Avante Maddox dealing with an oblique issue. Now, that would be big because if he is down, if he can't go, and we don't know the extent of this injury yet, if he can't go, it's, who is it, Josh Hawkins, if I'm not mistaken, would be the next man up for this defense, which was just recently added. I have no idea who that, do you have any idea who Josh Hawkins is?
I don't, but let me tell you something right now. Obviously, we shouldn't be happy that somebody's injured. That's a bad thing to do. But Bryce Callahan is a good football player who is on injured reserve, and that is not bad news for the Philadelphia Eagles. Man, 37 can play. I was in some earlier tapes. Callahan's been out for the past 2 weeks because I wanted to see the defense with Eddie Jackson on the field. Obviously, Eddie Jackson's been out for the past couple weeks. And 37 pops off the screen. Their slot corner is an impressive player who I have no idea where Callahan came from. This guy was an undrafted free agent, 2015 NFL draft. And so that 2015 NFL draft, they got Adrian Amos in the fifth round.
Right.
And Bryce Callahan is an undrafted free agent. That's obnoxious.
Look what they did with their secondary. They got Eddie Jackson in the fourth round, who I thought was a first round talent and fell because he broke his leg. And everyone, he was like in a top 15 discussion. He breaks his leg and then he drops to the fourth round because he can't test at the combine, if I'm not mistaken. They get Bryce Callahan out of Rice as a UDFA. They get Adrian Amos in the fifth round, who I really liked for the Eagles that year. They've done really well.
And you know what bothers me the most? Deion Bush, fourth round selection in the 2016 NFL draft. And Deion Bush was a player out of Miami, Florida. You want to know how well Deion Bush is playing?
How well is Deion Bush playing, Ben?
I was thinking to myself, man, I didn't realize Adrian Amos changed his number to 26. Ooh. And then about a halfway through the 49ers game, I was like, wait a minute. That's 38. That was Amos's number. Amos is still 38. Who is 26? And I rolled back and I said, that's Deion Bush. Oh, that's Deion Bush, who's playing incredible. So I talked about split field safety and filling against the run. When you have a single deep safety, he can't have a run responsibility, right? He has to stay deep. His run responsibility is going to be very, very late fill player. And if he is your primary fill player, it means you got out blocked at the front, you're out leveraged, and you're in trouble because the running back is like 8 yards down the field. So when you're in split field safeties, your two deep safeties have more significant run responsibilities because when run action comes their way, they can fill very hard downhill knowing that the weak side safety has cut back responsibility, right? And so what does that mean from a split field safety perspective? It means your linebacker in front of you, if you're the safety into the field, the Sam linebacker is going to crash down hard into the line of scrimmage. For the Bears, he's often going to be lined up on the line of scrimmage. He's just going to present end man on line of scrimmage responsibilities. And you correct him. You make him right. If he goes outside, you fill inside as the alley player. If he slices inside, you come outside as the force player. And that's a really nice thing for Sam linebackers. Sam linebackers love that because it gives them the freedom to go inside and outside because they know they have the safety behind them who's going to fix their fit, is going to correct them, is going to make them right. And hey, when your Sam linebacker, by alignment, is often like Khalil Mack and or Leonard Floyd, giving them freedom to do what they want against the run is kind of a good deal. Like, I saw you were posting Leonard Floyd clips against the run. I still think Floyd is a bad pass rusher, but he looks great against the run this year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he really stood out to me.
Right, and so that freedom for the Sam means that the safety behind him has to correct him and make him right. So you need your safeties to be very aggressive downhill and to be willing to come up and hit dudes, including offensive linemen. Deion Bush is willing to come up and hit dudes, including offensive linemen. His run fill ability is tremendous. He's no slouch in coverage, but the fact that they're lining him up 10 yards off the ball and he's regularly getting his nose into a play about 2 yards past the line of scrimmage for a third slash fourth safety, I don't really know if they like him, you know, better than they like Houston Carson in terms of free safety, strong safety, whatever. But as your safety, three, safety, four, Bush would be starting for the Eagles over literally everybody but Malcolm Jenkins right now. So, you know, it speaks to the lack of safety depth for Philadelphia. But Bush has been impressive, and that ability to stay too high and have your safeties fill down. Amos and Bush are fantastic fill safeties against the run, and it allows them to stay in too high, play spit field coverage, and then run those match quarters. That's you. In order to run that coverage, that two-high coverage, you need your safeties to be great run support players, and the Bears have that. That's huge.
And it's huge for him, too, because Eddie Jackson, who returned to practice, he was limited participation on Thursday. He's a fantastic player. But if you can do what you want to do defensively, and they put a lot of stress on these corners with what they like to do with these safeties, and we can talk about how flexible, you know, the Vic Fangio defense is. We already kind of alluded to it. But if you can do what you want to do still, despite having that player out, and you don't have to dumb down the playbook without really a huge drop-off. I don't want to shade Eddie Jackson. I think he's a top five defender for him for sure on that defense. Probably the second best, playing the second best ball on that defense this year. But nope. If you could do that.
I wrote my rankings for the best Bears defenders, by the way. We'll compare later.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Okay, yeah, we'll do that later. But yeah, if they can do that without Eddie Jackson, that's big. Eddie Jackson, of course, has some more playmaking ability there. So we'll be tracking whether or not he plays. Of course, keep it locked on bleedinggreennation.com, and they'll keep you updated on what is going on with his status, along with some of the other injury reports. Nothing has changed with Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, and Allen Robinson, ribs, shoulder, ribs. They did confirm that Anthony Miller's shoulder did dislocate because the brace was loose and has dislocated before. This is an ongoing issue for him this season. So we'll see if he can stay healthy for the game against the Eagles. He's been fighting through it all season. NFL players are not like us. As far as the Eagles go, some of the other reports, Wendell Smallwood with his hand. He has some sort of hand issue, was limited participation. Mike Wallace with his ankle, also limited. Full participation, Nick Foles with his ribs, Jason Kelsey with his knee. We shouldn't see too many changes. Hopefully Maddox obviously plays. But Ben, I mean, you look at this Bears defense, and I'm going to run some numbers past you here. So instead of using volume stats, a lot of times what I like to do is look at, you know, efficiency stats. We do it a lot on this show. And one area in which the Bears defense, because if you look at their like yards per, they're like 7th in rush yards and 11th per, you know, pass yards. And it doesn't tell the story. So the Bears, their defense, their per drive efficiency rankings are as such. They are tied for 2nd in the number of plays per drive, 1st in yards allowed, 1st in time of possession, 1st in drive success rate, 1st in points allowed, 1st in score allowed, 1st in touchdown allowed, 1st turnover created, 1st interceptions created, 1st in defensive scoring. Ben, I'll ask you, is that good?
Mike, I'm here to say, unequivocally, that a lot of firsts is probably good. This Bears defense will give up some yardage on you. They will give up some space on you. They very rarely surrender early first down, so they put you in a lot of third down situations. And in the red zone, they're unparalleled. Like, the Eagles have a good red zone defense. This red zone defense is stupid good. Even if you're able to convert multiple third downs, which Nick Foles has been doing at an unbelievable rate that has to regress at some point, once you get down inside the 20s, this is the best defense in the league by a mile. People have said this before, but, you know, it's worth saying here on the podcast for us. I definitely expect a game full of turnovers on both sides, because I don't think either offense is going to be able to do much in the red zone.
And speaking of turnovers, let's talk about the impact of Khalil Mack on this defense, because we can't go too long without talking about the best player on this defense and what he brings. And first, I wanted to make a note about how they're deploying and aligning him. There was a lot of talk last year about the potential for Khalil Mack in the Eagles matchup with the Raiders to switch sides and play on the Vitae side, because that was the favorable matchup. But that didn't materialize. Last year, Mack spent 80% of his snap on the defense's left. So he lined up on the right tackle side, which with the Eagles is obviously the Lane Johnson side. Against the Eagles, he only had 3 rushes on Vitae's side, which is great for us. Only 8% of his total snaps. The Bears said, screw that when they acquired him. We're moving him around, and he's at a near 50-50 split for pass rushes left and right. So not only do they move him around to exploit matchups, but they're dropping him slightly more. So you may end up allocating resources to his side and neutering your offense, if you can figure it out, when you're actually adding an extra man in coverage to that side. Meanwhile, on the other side, they're bringing an overload. So you have to be careful with how you game plan for him. And it makes it really tough on an offense to key in on where the pressure is going to come from. They do it with Leonard Floyd too. He drops 1 out of every 5 snaps. And again, they do that so they can rush with 4 while still bringing what equates to a blitz if you're looking at it from a side versus side perspective. Another thing Mac will do to help his linebackers in coverage when they have man coverage against running backs is he'll go attack those guys releasing into the routes, and he's going to give his guys time to get in coverage and get even with all that's going on. And even with that, he still finds a way to get to the quarterback. I remember seeing this back in week 3 against the Cardinals, and I put this video up on my timeline on Twitter. But before the snap, he looks back at Danny Trevathan, the linebacker, and Trevathan, you know, they're kind of communicating back and forth. And Mac's like, hey, you want me to bump this guy for you? Trevathan's like, yo, that would be dope. So what he does is the running back releases, Mac bumps him, and then he's able to track down a scrambling Josh Rosen, cause a fumble, which Trevathan then scoops up. It was the ultimate example of scratching your back and then scratching it again, which really sums up his impact on this defense.
Mac's obnoxious. It's just, it's unkind and unfair. So 2 things you notice, I think, about Mac's deployment. Number one, if Mac has the opportunity to rush as a 7-tech or wider against an uncovered offensive tackle, there's no tight end to that side. Game. I don't care who the offensive tackle is. Could be Lane Johnson. Gonna be rough. If you cover him with a tight end, so as to create more congestion to get a chip on him, whatever, the Bears will very gladly twist him. So if you try to put a tight end over him, he'll line up as inside a 7-tech. They'll take the 3-tech and they'll just run a twist, which now means you're not chipping Mac with the tight end. You're like, oh, well, he's coming to the inside. That's better. No, it's not. He's ridiculously powerful. He's 255 pounds. He has enough power to be a 300. He's like Fletcher Cox in terms of like his interior power.
And he can split those doubles. He's so great as a crasher that he's a real, usually crashers on stunts, they're to take guys away from the guy that you want to free up. He splits them all the time, dude.
That's why he's obnoxious, because you're like, all right, I got him to do what I wanted him to do because I put a tight end out there. I discouraged him from going around the outside. And Mac's like, well, listen, I'm still just going to be as big of an issue in here, which is, again, obnoxious. And then, you mentioned the ability to cut routes, the number 2 or the number 3 receiver to that side. When Mac's aligned as the Sam and he's either off ball or he's in a 2-point stance, he will be responsible for collisioning that route. And when Mac collisions you, if you're a small person, number 1, it sucks. You're going to get knocked way off your route. It's going to disrupt the timing. But number 2, like you said, now you have a situation where Mac is a delayed rusher where he can see the quarterback's drop point and he can see the inside-outside rush path. So it's even then, it's not... You didn't help yourself. It's still a significant problem. That being said, really interesting thing to think about for this week. Philadelphia has been stellar this year at neutralizing the best defensive linemen they've faced. 2 games against DeMarcus Lawrence. Lawrence this season, 10.5 sacks, 15 tackles for loss, 23 quarterback hits, right? That he's averaging just under a sack a game. He's averaging a TFL a game. He's averaging 1.5 quarterback hits a game. In 2 games, 2 TFLs, 2 quarterback hits, no sacks. J.J. Watt, 16 sacks this year. It's 1 a game. 18 TFLs, 25 quarterback hits. He had 1 TFL, 0 quarterback hits, 0 sacks. And then Aaron Donald, the best defensive player in the country, who I acknowledge does not play edge, but still, Aaron Donald, averaging 1.3 sacks a game, which is nuts. 1.6 TFL a game, still nuts. 2.6 quarterback hits a game. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
0 sacks, 0 TFLs, 1 quarterback hit. The best rusher that your team has not performed well against the Philadelphia Eagles this year, especially late in the season. They had a little trouble with Jarrell Casey, week 4 against the Titans.
Yeah.
A little trouble with Calais Campbell in the middle of the season against the Jaguars. Recently, when the offensive line's been playing better, they've been doing fantastic at neutering your best pass rusher. How does that get pulled off? It's not always about giving 2 blockers to his side. It's not always about chipping him and sliding protection his directions. It often is, and they will do that. Like, I'm not saying that's not part of it. It is. If you want to neutralize Khalil Mack, you are going to have to dedicate two people to him on third and long.
Yep.
It's Khalil Mack.
Right.
Two people is better than one. Like, we're not, let's not get over complicated here, but you can slow down Mack's play by making him a conflict player. And a player in conflict, like Mack, when he's the Sam linebacker, will have pass and run responsibilities. He will have to be the end man on the line of scrimmage at times and set an edge to the outside. And other times he'll be responsible for crashing inside and for collapsing a gap against a puller away, so on and so forth. He will have conflicting responsibilities against different play designs. And so when you run things like read option, which is something that Nick Foles has done in his career before, like, you know, he did a lot with Chip Kelly. He pulled the ball and he kept it. You run that three times a game to Mack's side, you're going to slow down his ability to chase zone away. That's how conflicting a player works. If you run jet motion that starts away from Mack and comes towards Mack and then leave him unblocked, he has to wait to respect the jet motion threat, because if that jet motion player gets outside of him, the Eagles have a numbers advantage to that side. So you play action a jet motion sweep, and now you can slow him down. Hey, jet motion, and then run split zone flow, and now you can get a tight end to block Mack for two whole seconds.
Yeah.
Because you force Mack to slow down.
Are you worried at all when you saw the Bears play the Rams and what they were able to play it even, play plus one on that side that the jet motion was coming to, and it kind of freed up Mack? Do you see the same thing here?
So this is what's critical to understand here, is that when you bring jet motion and when you bring any sort of a cross motion where a player changes their side of the formation, they go to the other side of the ball, Bears will want to rock and roll their safeties. They're going to want to kick their coverage out to adjust to the new strength. Like I said, they like to be split field.
Right.
But they will bring that new strong side safety down, and they will pull that free safety up into middle of the field closed. What does that do? It leaves your backside receiver one-on-one. And I'll tell you right now, the number one weakness I can tell you about in the Bears defense is that they are very, very comfortable leaving backside receivers in one-on-one man coverage with Kyle Fuller and with Prince Amukamara, which, again, is not inherently bad. Like, the Bears have only allowed 500-yard receivers this year. For those of you playing at home, that is good, right? That's great. But Jeffrey's got 4 inches, 15 pounds on both Amukamara and Fuller, if not more. He's probably got 20 pounds on Fuller. And Nick Foles is dedicated to getting Alshon the ball in one-on-one man coverage situations, to the point where if they see that they get it, they will check to it at the line of scrimmage. And so if you're going out there and you come out with, in my opinion, what they'll very likely do, they're going to come out with a very run-heavy, very misdirection-heavy, very screen-heavy opening script, and it's not going to work, but it's fine. You run all that stuff. You see how they're checking to your formations. Because, again, the Bears have seen very little 12 personnel this year, and we don't necessarily know how they're going to check to, like, ace wing, like when Philadelphia goes formation into the boundary.
Yeah.
I couldn't find it anywhere. I went through four games of film trying to find good 12 personnel reps. They're very limited, right? And so we don't know necessarily how they're going to check. So if you figure out how they're going to check in-game, well, then you can start setting up formation in motion so as to ensure you get Alshon backside. And then, to me, every third and five-plus is 3-by-1 set, Alshon to the backside, and if they're going to give us man, we're giving them the football.
Right.
Like, if they, I tweeted this out, if the Eagles win this game, Alshon Jeffrey has more than 100 yards receiving, period. Like, I would be shocked if the Eagles win this and Alshon doesn't have a big game. He needs to. For the way that they are going to, when you run match coverage is not designed to take away the outside receiver. Match coverage is designed to take away the inside receivers, the tight ends, the slots. Those are the guys who are going to struggle with match coverage, because no matter which way they go, there's going to be a defender waiting for them. That's the point of the match. They wait until you break, and then they cover you so they know which direction you're heading. The outside receivers are the one who gets isolated coverages. So even though Philadelphia's been running their offense through 12 personnel, and their tight ends have been very strong, and they're still going to give targets to their tight ends, and it's still going to be fine, the little stuff, whatever, the big players are going to come on the outside, Alshon Jeffrey, and then Nelson Agholor to a smaller extent as well. Alshon's got to be the one who wins in that regard. So yeah, the jet motion to hold Khalil Mack, but if they spin into it, you get the backside matchup you want. You just have to be able to hit on those plays.
Yeah, and two interesting notes on that. I wanted to follow up on what you said, the 12 personnel. I saw the same thing. We're seeing statistics out there that are saying that the Bears have seen either the least or close to the least amount of 12 personnel.
Yeah, 8% of the snaps per Sharp Football Stats. Warren Sharp, shout out Warren. 8% of the snaps they've seen on defense this season have come out of 12 personnel. They lead the league in snaps seen against 11 personnel at 79%. The next closest is 71, Let me tell you something right now. I watch a one game of Bryce Callahan. I don't want to be playing 11 personnel. Dude's a stud. I don't get it. Adrian Amos? Eddie Jackson? You want to be working the inside against those guys? Get that nonsense out of here. Expose Danny Trevathan in coverage. He's the only one who's bad in coverage.
Yeah, that's it, because they have linebackers that can cover too, and we'll talk about that. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was that checking to when you see cover one and you see, you know, one-on-one coverage on the backside with Alshon Jeffrey. Our friend Mark Schofield, who is my co-host on the QB Sco show here on Bleeding Green Nation, just wrote a post for Pro Football Weekly, and I got a chance to look at that. And it's funny, he sent me two GIFs before he published that piece. And both GIFs are Nick Foles looking out to Alshon Jeffrey.
Yes.
Putting his open palm down to his right with his right hand, taking the snap, and then throwing it to Alshon Jeffrey. He's giving him the signal of, this is you, bud. This is all you.
If you go to my Foles post on Bleeding Green Nation, and I talk about the faith throws that Nick Foles is willing to make and how he's willing to use his outside receivers in one-on-one coverage. There's a third down conversion against the Rams, went for like 26 yards. It was a huge gaslighting play for Eagles Twitter, because this was when we were in the throes of like, Zach Ertz getting 95 targets a game, Alshon gets 3, and Alshon got this big downfield target. And if you watch Nick Foles looks up at the stat and looks to Alshon and like looks back at the defense like, dude, are you seeing this? Like, there's no, it's just Talib. There's no way anybody else is coming over. And then he's like, yeah, he takes the snap. He doesn't even drop back. He just turns and puts it up. It is literally catch and throw in terms of the snap. Yeah. And so if you're going to get that one-on-one coverage, which you will, I can't emphasize it enough, the Bears want to run match zone, but when you go unbalanced formations, and the Eagles have been doing more 4x1 unbalanced formations, which I'm here for that, because that really screws with match coverage in a big way.
Yeah.
When you run unbalanced formations, they will check to man coverage on the backside so that they can match the play side. And if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, Eagles offense is a weak side offense. It wants you to dedicate players to the strong side so it has space on the weak side. That's where Philadelphia is going to be successful. There and then in the flats, because the Bears will be willing to let you have completions to the flats, and then they'll try to rally and tackle. And Nick Foles throws, you know, the little swing routes and the little flare routes to his backs, to his tight ends, more than literally anybody else on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
So you're going to see a ton of targets there, and it's a question of tackle breaking at that point. But that's a smaller note.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about Nick Foles here, but I'm going to kind of set it up in this way, because my big question about this offense is, can you run the ball against this Bears team? Because it feels like what we talked about in that Texans game when we were praising guys like DJ Reader, the inside defensive lineman, Jadeveon Clowney, who really wreaked havoc on our run game, J.J. Watt, and of course the linebackers that were so good against the run. You look at this Bears defense, and I would argue that Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks are the best interior defensive line duo in the league.
Woo!
Mac does everything well. He is going to wreck you in the run game too. But again, as we alluded to earlier in the show, you've also got Leonard Floyd, who is playing really good against the run too. That's four guys that are playing fantastic against the run. And Floyd, for his part, does a great job leveraging his gaps, using his length to stay clean, to put himself in a position to make plays to the inside lane and to the outside lane of his gap. So he's not a weakness there either. They're just a really technically sound defense, and they're disruptive. And I know last year we trapped the daylights out of Akeem Hicks with wham plays and short traps and long traps, and that led to some successful runs. Ben, do you see us having that type of same success again? Is it that simple, or should we really move to more of a 69-31 pass run ratio like we saw against the Texans?
Yeah, I think 69-31 is pretty nice.
Yeah.
There is no reason in the entire face of the world ever to run outside zone against this team.
Oh yeah, it's impossible. Same thing with the Texans. It's the same thing we talked about with the Texans. Yeah. They flow so fast.
Like, imagine having like two of the faster linebackers in the league playing behind one elite edge setter and another really good edge setter.
Right.
And then in front of them are Akeem Hicks, who's kind of slow. Sorry, Akeem. But two defensive tackles who play great in pursuit, especially one being Goldman, who is quick as heck.
And you can be Hicks and you can be kind of slow, but his block deconstruction is so quick.
Well, you don't really block Hicks. You just stay in his way for as long as possible. Hicks or Goldman, gun to your head, who's better?
Man.
I'll put it to you this way. I had my answer that I thought was true, and I still think it's the same player, but man, I feel a lot less confident having gone through 3-4 games of tape.
I think they're both really good. Like I said, they're the best interior defensive line duo in the league.
Heck, don't be wishy-washy.
I will comfortably take Akeem Hicks right now. I think Eddie Goldman is an ascending player who can challenge that next year. I'll put it to you that way. I'll comfortably take Hicks now. Who do you got?
You want to know what's obnoxious?
What's obnoxious?
Besides Khalil Mack. Remember when like they drafted Jonathan Bullard out of Florida?
Yeah.
And it was going to be like, oh, like Bullard's going to be this thing for them. No, like they busted on an early defensive line pick and the defensive line still looks like this.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you? That's just mean. Yes, I agree. It's Akeem Hicks. Akeem Hicks is better. Goldman, like, you know, if he continues to skyrocket develop, then sure. Akeem Hicks, like I said, is the sort of dude in terms of size, strength, and hand placement where you don't really block him. You just stay in his way for as long as possible. And because he's not super quick, you can expose him in that regard. Yeah, Philadelphia is definitely going to try to trap him. The other nice thing about trapping is if Akeem Hicks is like the one technique you're trapping Khalil Mack on the opposite side, you get to down block Khalil Mack with Lane Johnson with a tackle, which is a really great leverage point for a run that hits inside. And Mike, you'll look, the Bears have surrendered 2 100-yard rushers this year. Saquon Barkley ran for 125 on them, 70 of which came on like one play. But then Frank Gore, in a game that the Bears lost to Brock Osweiler and the Miami Dolphins, which is just such a confusing sentence to say out loud. If you go through and you look at how Gore and Kenyon Drake, who also had a good game, were able to be successful in the running game, they ran straight at Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan.
Yeah.
And said, listen, we can't get outside of you, so we are going to run with power up here. They did run split zone. They immediately banged it upfield, which is, it screams Darren Sproles. That's how Sproles runs split zone. So you can run split zone and outside zone as long as you run it weak with the intention of banging it back upside the interior A gap. But then it was a ton of just simple single back power, duo, and then fold blocks from whenever they had H backs. That's how you have to do it. You need to run upfield on this team. If you try to run side to side against this speed, you're going to have tackle for loss situations. And like I said, the Bears are one of the best defenses in the league at limiting your first and second down yardage. They give up very few first downs on first down, which constantly puts you in third down situations. You need to keep those situations manageable. You cannot afford to lose yards on first down. My number one complaint with Peterson's offense during the Super Bowl year, during the tough times this year, whenever, is his willingness to throw plays behind the line of scrimmage, especially when they get inside of the 40, right? Little bubble screens and little pitches and like all this horizontal stuff. No mas! Can't do it. Begging for second and 13. And you can't be doing that in near field goal range in a game where points are going to be at a premium. Got to be able to advance the football forward. But I don't want that to be a Josh Adams game. You know, they think that that's Josh Adams. It shouldn't be. It should be Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
Josh Adams shouldn't touch the football, but he will. But as long as they're running downhill, I'll be okay with it.
I want to talk about something real quick, too, because I looked this up on Next Gen Stats, and what I found was pretty interesting for both teams, because I know both teams count box numbers and decide whether or not they're going to run or pass. And that goes so heavily into the run-pass ratio that people don't realize. People think Peterson doesn't want to establish the run and all this stuff. He does. He does if the box numbers are advantageous. Ben, if I had to give you a guess, and two of these guys are in this game, who do you think is the lowest percentage of running against 8-plus man boxes in the league? There's two guys in this game. They're both bottom two.
So I'm guessing who's the bottom?
Yeah. Who sees the least amount of 8-plus man boxes?
Cohen.
Cohen is 5.05%.
Ah, that's good!
That's the lowest in the league. The second lowest is Wendell Smallwood at 6.9%.
You're telling me Wendell Smallwood runs the least, like the second least in the league in 8-man boxes, and he still is running like Wendell Smallwood?
Correct.
Oof! It's not good!
Jordan Howard, who's averaging, 3.7 yards per carry, sees 14%. That's super low as well. Josh Adams sees around the same percent.
As we discussed with Jordan Howard, Howard needs to learn how to just put his foot down and go upfield.
Yeah.
Which he once knew and was great at, and now I think he's just trying too hard.
You know who spends the... Okay, I'll throw this out there too. I know this is a Bears defense preview show, but I wanted to throw this out there since we're on the topic. According to Next Gen Stats, who spends the most time behind the line of scrimmage on run plays?
Josh Adams.
Tariq Cohen. Because he just runs around in
circles
like a creep.
What the heck, man? Okay, in my opinion, my bet is that that number is thrown off by the fact that Cohen will get those swing passes right. that are runs because they're laterals,
yeah.
where he's behind the line for like 2 seconds because he gets the ball 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So I don't believe in that number.
I just think it's fascinating that he's got the lightest boxes and he spends the most time behind right. the line.
But this is why you have to listen to the podcast, only understand numbers within context. Like right. if you just look at the numbers, it makes no sense. You look at the film, well, it clearly makes sense as to how these things are being charted and understood.
Yeah.
That's why you got to you got to listen to the podcast. You can see through the obfuscation.
Our advice, don't try to establish the run against this defense unless they give you favorable numbers. And even then, maybe kind of question a little bit. Make sure you got your side with a plus one with a blocker and everything like that. It being like that, the same way that it was against the Texans, it's going to have to be, and we asked for it, and we got it from Nick Foles. It's going to have to be a Nick Foles game. He's going to have to be confident. He's going to have to be solid. He's been very good recently. And recently on BleedingGreenNation.com, you wrote a great piece, a huge piece that you had been working on for a while. It's getting a lot of chatter, a lot of views, too. It's doing fantastic. A lot of praise.
There's way too many comments on it. I'm not reading any of the comments. I'm sorry if you commented on it, but there's like 300, and I'm not about that life.
I went through about 200 of them today, and I was like, I just wasted so much time.
It's all Cowboys fans.
So, Ben, can you kind of give us the meat and potatoes of this article and maybe how any yep. pieces of it kind of translate into this matchup with the Bears, if you haven't already on this show?
It works because, like we just said, you have to have numbers with context. There's a lot of articles that share numbers about Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. You know, Nick Foles, over the past 3 weeks, has been the league leader in passing yards and in yards per attempt and in passer rating, completion percentage, everything. He set the single-season passing yards record. He tied 25 straight completions, which... Phillip Rivers, you know, it's his second tied, you know, incredible NFL record for passing. There's a lot that goes on. And then you look and you see that his ex-comp friend, next-gen stats is super high. His time to throw for PFF is super low. And you're just wondering, like, what does this mean in context with Carson? Well, you go and you watch the offenses, and Carson and Nick just run different offenses. They simply do. And that's what's confusing, is typically when a backup quarterback comes in, well, you slightly change the offense, but you're still running the same system. And yeah, like you could argue that it's like just like a slight change to mutation, but really, the reads and I would say the philosophy, the ideology behind the offense are quite different in terms of Philadelphia. Like this is, I think, a great way of explaining it. Carson Wentz has more, or Nick Foles has more yards per passing play. Nick Foles has more yards per passing play on first down than Carson Wentz by like a mile, but Carson gets a first down on first down like 35% of the time, and Nick does it like 24% of the time.
So Wentz is the more bimodal quarterback.
So I would argue, no, it's the opposite, because Foles' depth of target is super low, and he's not going to pick up a lot of first downs, but he has such an inflated yards per attempt because he gets these super deep plays all of a sudden, whereas Carson Wentz spends far more time in the intermediate area of the field.
Okay.
And that's why he's got more middling depth target, right? But like that's a perfect example of just how like those numbers are incongruous. There's discrepancy there. And it's because the offenses aren't the same. They're different in terms of how they try to win football games. Foles is such a more high completion percentage thrower who's maximizing yak. Carson is so much more interested in actually generating air yards underneath his throws, hitting intermediate levels, and capitalizing on those ideas. Nick Foles wants to get rid of the ball. Carson wants to hold the ball. They're different quarterbacks, and the offense is built differently because of that. And so then we go through what Nick Foles looks like, how the offense is built for him to be successful, and what he might look like as a free agent. I mentioned the flats thing earlier. Nick Foles' ideal offense lets him circle one underneath zone defender, typically the curl flat defender to one side of the field, and they just run stick. They run slant flat.
Yeah.
They run curl flat. They run smash. And they make him wrong all the time.
Right.
Just, it's constant. And it's not dissimilar to stuff you saw happen in the Chip Kelly era in terms of those quick-hitting mesh crossers and mesh sit wheel that we've talked about and all the various, you know, 11-21 with double slants. It's all just exposing that one zone defender. So this offense is built under Nick Foles to get defenses into zone. Chicago's fine with that. They'd love to stick in zone the whole game. Get defenses into zone, isolate one defender, and make him wrong. When you run match coverage, it's much trickier. But they do give up area into the flats. They do have their linebackers chase into the flats very often. When they're responsible for the third receiver to that side, who's typically the running back. And so you can get stuff there. You can get your wheel routes to hit in that regard, which I think Chicago probably knows is coming. But Nick Foles, simply, we use this construction a lot. He's a player you win with, not because of. It's simple that he does not. elevate the players around him from an on-field X's and O's perspective. Foles absolutely elevates the people around him from a, like, emotional perspective and from a preparation perspective and from a belief perspective. It's very clear that the team believes in him and that elevates them. But he doesn't elevate people in an on-field perspective. He is a facilitator. He honestly reminds me, you know, we talked a little bit about Ryan Fitzpatrick. When I was watching the Lions game against the Bears going through this, I was thinking to myself, man, like, Matt Stafford isn't what he used to be and has been kind of tampered down a little bit by the Jim Bob Cooter experience. And, like, you know, figuring out Stafford, whether or not he's good or bad, has been like a weird thing. But yeah. Stafford and Foles do some similar stuff. Stafford's got arm strength that Foles doesn't have. But in terms of the short area distribution, the quick throws into the flats, the taking advantage of off coverage with quick hitches, it's all very similar in terms of offensive design. So that's the piece on Foles. It was a good piece. It was a fun piece. But Foles is not going to win this game in terms of, you know, like, it's easy to remember the incredible throw downfield, you know, Alshon Jeffrey touchdown, Torrey Smith touchdown against the Vikings. That's just not, like, that's salient in our memories, but that's not really Foles' game. Foles' game is going to be the quick dink and duck stuff, maximizing yak, that sort of an approach. You can pull it off against the Bears, but you're going to need to win those man matchups as well. Otherwise, you're going to score 7 points max.
Yeah, so it's got to be a big Foles game from an efficiency standpoint, basically, is what needs to
happen.
The
biggest thing Foles can do is not turn the football over. The number one hugest thing. Just don't provide any short fields. Don't provide any easy points.
No, that's a great point. Ben, I think we covered it. It is time for predictions. On the preview show, when we did the Bears offense, Eagles defense, the line was the same. The over-under was 41. The line right now is 6.5 with Eagles as the underdogs. I remember we called it 24-17 for the exercise. Did you take, you took the over on the Bears scoring 24?
No, under? I want to, and then I took the under.
Yes, that's correct. So we both took the under, right? So 17 for the Eagles. We'll talk about that first. 17 for the Eagles offense, over or under?
I'm under on 17. I simply think this Bears defense poses too much of a problem, and they don't give up enough explosive plays, and Philadelphia needs those explosive plays to wrap up points. I mean, they have been one of the highest scoring teams over the past 6 weeks of the regular season, which is great for Philadelphia. It's been like 27 or 28 points per game, but I don't see it in terms of against this Bears team. I will say, if they pull it off against this Bears team, which I'm not picking them to beat the Bears, I'm picking the Bears to win. If they pull it off against this Bears team, they're going to win the Super Bowl, right? Like, if they win that playoff game against such a difficult Bears defense, and Nick Foles again notches a playoff, an improbable playoff win under his belt, I don't see how you're going to stop this team. They're going to be bananas. They're going to be the most inspired defending Super Bowl champion underdog masked up team in the face of the, you know what I mean? It's going to be absurd. So
yeah,
if they beat the Bears, I'm never picking against them ever again. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I see, like I said, 19-13 on a Bears podcast I was on earlier this week. I feel like maybe it's going to be a little bit closer. I think Philadelphia can score on these guys. I really do. I think that they can move the football like the way I've spent a lot of time with the Eagles offense the past 3 weeks of the season with Nick Foles, and they can move the football. They've been good. I can easily talk myself into an Eagles win. I really, really can. If the Eagles win, three big things will happen. Number one, Alshon's going to have a massive game.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of he's going to constantly beat man coverage. He's going to force Chicago into zone and cone coverages that they don't want to have to use, and that will open up the rest of the offense. That's number one. Number two, Nick Foles' time to throw will be zero, right? Like, we'll simply just, like, he will catch the ball and shoot regularly. He's going to have to get rid of the ball very, very quickly. Not only on the man coverage concept to Alshon and making those choices pre-snap, but also against those match coverage zones, when you can beat match coverage zones with very quick breaking routes out of like stack alignments, not a bunch of alignments. And I think that's where Philadelphia is going to be very heavy, especially in the RPO game as well. And then number three, finally, the thing that, you know, we're going back now to the defensive side of the ball, but the key for the game is going to be there. You're going to need to have Fletcher Cox and Michael Bennett take over in the interior defensive line. So that's to generate pressure on Trubisky. It's going to look very much like the Texans game in terms of, we're fine if he beats us with his legs. We're just not going to let him get outside of the pocket and rip us to shreds that way. Trubisky makes mistakes outside of the pocket. And so if you get him out and he throws on the run, he will throw picks. But it's the point of, like, if we take him out of the pocket, we don't let him get to his first read on all their constraint concepts, we're winning as a defense. Those three things happen, which, one has happened in recent weeks, two has been happening in recent weeks, and three has happened in recent weeks. So it's not out of the question. Eagles beat the Bears. So I can talk myself into it, but I'm not there yet. I'm not brave enough.
if the Eagles beat the Bears, I think it's because they pick off Trubisky three times and they don't let those opportunities go to waste.
Three?
Three times. He did it against the Rams.
Three?
He did it against the Rams and they only scored 15 points. Rams weren't able to capitalize, but Trubisky is going to give you opportunities to turn the ball over. They have to take advantage of every, even if it's two, you know what I mean? Like, it's, they have to take advantage and get some short fields. Three's a little high. Three interceptions a little high. I'm taking the Bears. I'm taking them 20-13. So both of us have taken the Bears. You can yell at us now. You can yell at Ben for his Nick Foles, Matthew Stafford comp because Matthew Stafford never won a Super Bowl, even though that's not the point of these comparisons when we talk about individual aspects of their game. I can already see it coming. Ben, let the we know what's up. I mean, we got a chat with Cody Alexander coming up for match quarters. What, that's the end of the week.
I have a joke for you.
Ooh.
I wrote the Foles piece, and Byronic Gyro 1, who is a listener of the podcast, Byronic Gyro, said, so if I understand correctly, two of Nick's strengths are his speed, referring to his processing speed, and his use of that mesh sit wheel, which that concept we talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. So he said, it's almost like you could say that this is a game between, wait for it, Mitch Trubisky versus Mesh Too Briskly.
Oh, come on.
That was amazing. I thought that was great. So yeah, shout out to Mesh Trubisky, quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles. I told him I was going to read it on the podcast because that had me laughing so much. Thank you, as always, for listening to this ridiculous show that we call the Kissed and Solak Show here on BGN Radio. We do appreciate you swinging by. Could be the last preview game, but hopefully it's not because that would be lame. And so we're going to hope the Eagles beat the Bears this week on Sunday. I'll be at the game, which will be exciting. Mike won't. Sucks for Mike.
Gee, thanks, Ben. I am very happy for you.
I am very happy. Rate and review the podcast because that's amazing. We really appreciate your ratings and your reviews. All of you guys who hit us up on Twitter and tell us how much you love the podcast, that's amazing. We love that. That means a great deal to us. If you do put that on iTunes, it does a lot more for us algorithm-wise in terms of the podcast getting clout and getting good ratings, and we get to show it to our bosses, and they're very happy. But we appreciate all that wonderful feedback. We've had a tremendous week of interaction with our listeners. We hope to get another one. We will be producing the post-game podcast, which will drop, you know, either late Sunday night or early Sunday morning. Win or lose, rain or shine, that will be the podcast that comes out. And then, as is the nature of the playoffs, we're in a holding pattern. We will know what our next week's schedule looks like when we see the results of the game. But Eagles are going to win, even though I picked the Bears, because the sweater is undefeated. Thank you for listening. This is the end.
Sometimes the best things happen when they don't make a whole ton of sense.
I feel like that's a tenet you live your life by, isn't it, Mike? Sick burn, Ben. Sick burn.
Beautiful. We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all Flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.